Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl who has everything? Look at this trove, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold? Looking around here, you think, sure, she's got everything. I've got gadgets.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast from thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today to talk about a mermaid film, though perhaps not the mermaid film, we have Bill Graham.
Woo!
And we also have Michael Snydell.
Hello!
Hello. And today's film that we will be talking about is the Polish musical The Lure, which, where did this come from? Like, what? I'm usually able to track, like, which thing
it might have been TIFF.
Yeah. I don't know.
It premiered at Sundance. Okay.
This is pretty odd for Sundance.
This film is actually came out in 2015.
Yeah, it came out in Poland in 2015, and yet here we are now. We're finally getting it. Because we were interested in it, and because it's now on streaming, and because we
King
Arthur,
and also very likely on Criterion very soon.
Yeah, and also because one person on Twitter asked for it surreptitiously after we, or I should say serendipitously asked for this after we'd already decided on it. So it was like the universe telling us that we were doing the right thing.
The one person in the universe telling us that.
But we love to bring attention to little scene films that are worthwhile. So we'll see if The Lure is worthwhile. Before we get into that, let me remind everyone that we are brought to you as always by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. Mubi collects films from all over the world. A film like The Lure would not be out of place on Mubi, honestly. And they release them one day at a time so that you're never overwhelmed by choices of terrible things like you are on Netflix or Hulu. Instead, you get a curated drip into your cinematic IV. Every day, they introduce a new film. You have 30 days to watch. You can also download it to your mobile device. I am currently trying to pick out which ones I'm going to download for when I am convalescing at the beach. So, thank you, Mubi, for being awesome. And we want to give you the opportunity to see how awesome they are. You can go to mubi.com/filmstage, and you can get a free 30-day trial of Mubi. Again, that is mubi.com/filmstage. And there's not much else to go through. I mean, we can be found on Twitter at Filmstage Show, Facebook The Filmstage Show. You can email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. And of course, we love getting reviews on iTunes. After last week's whole thing that happened where we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, we actually got a direct message on our Twitter account, and the person said that he or she and their friends would be unsubscribing until I was replaced on this show. Which, I mean, it raises a lot of questions. Like, did they all discuss this, and then was this person made their spokesperson, or were they just, like, throwing their weight around? Who knows? I'm just glad that they didn't go on iTunes, because they probably would have given us a bad review. Unlike Steve Holt, with 4 exclamation points, who went on
Steve
iTunes
Holt.
And said, talking about movies, .. fight. Then they said, really enjoyable film podcast. The hosts are thoughtful, have strong opinions, and aren't afraid to argue their points. Which, I think Guardians of the Galaxy proved that. So, if that's the type of thing you love, according to Steve Holt, you've come to the right place. But yeah, other than that, I kind of want to say, like, last night we found out that Powers Booth had passed away.
Yeah.
Which was a bit of a shock. He was a young man, I guess, relative.
68.
Yeah, he was 68. He's not like a 25-year-old. But younger than you would expect. And I mean, I had actually just started a Deadwood rewatch. So if you don't know who Powers Booth is, he played Cy Tulliver in Deadwood. He also played the evil politician in the Sin City films. And
he's really good in Tombstone as well, which he co-stars with another person who recently passed, Bill Paxton.
I had forgotten that Bill Paxton passed, and I was like shocked for a minute until I remembered that that was something that I should remember. Man, what a downer episode already. But yeah, so I just wanted to bring that up because he is fantastic and has one of the greatest names that will ever be, you know, ascribed into the universe. Powers Booth.
Sure, sure.
Also, you have another excuse to watch Sudden Death again.
I was just gonna say, perfect time for everyone out there who's not doing it already to get a Deadwood rewatch in. Because rumors about a Deadwood film are still swirling.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
They are.
That there was one of the supporting actors, you know, didn't he tweet a picture of the script? I believe is the newest update.
Yes. I think it was the guy who played Dan Doherty.
Yeah.
Talking about how he read the script and everything. Anyway, I just wanted to give a moment to Powers Booth. Let's not get into HBO shows that deserve a movie like Luck. Let's swiftly move on and talk about The Lure. This film. I'm going to apologize profusely in advance to any Polish listeners or listeners of Polish descent for what I'm about to do to every name that I speak. We practiced before we started recording. I just want people to know.
That is a very loose definition of practice, sir.
We did a run through. We tried. And but I'm probably going to screw this up a lot, and I apologize. That's The Lure, directed by Agnieszka Smozinska, written by Robert Balesto, and starring Marta Mazurek and Michalina Olsanska. I think that's pretty good. Here is the
I like how you said that's pretty good.
I think I did pretty well. Przecież was nie zjemy, wyjemy, 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 wyjemy.
A to już lokal nocny z zapojami wysokoalkoholowymi i tańcami.
Właściwie to są dzieci mojej dobrej znajomej.
Będą robiły u nas chórki i striptizy.
Musicie się tylko dobrze bawić, reszta pójdzie sama.
All right. No need to do a run through of the plot because it's all pretty clear from that trailer, I'm sure. But for anyone out there who doesn't speak fluent Polish. So this movie takes place in the 80s when a pair of mermaid sisters begin working in a nightclub / cabaret. And it follows all of the things that they have to do. And that people have to get used to with them being mermaids. They also, it should be noted, eat people. So that becomes an issue from time to time. I have seen this movie referred to as the cannibal mermaid film. However, I have to take exception to that. Because if they are mermaids and they're eating people, I think they're just human eating. They're not technically cannibals, but... Anyway, so it's
good point.
It's a musical.
Yes. So, and it's comedy.
Yeah.
It also hews pretty closely to Hans Christian Andersen's like original fairy tale. This is much less aerial and much more that, you know, the the original Danish story.
Yeah, I was about to say the mermaid mythos in here is a huge, very close to the original with regards to all kinds of stuff. We'll get into it. Let's see what we thought about it. So, Bill Graham, why don't you kick us
off? Oh, jeez.
Would you like to pass?
No. I'll go. All right. This was like one of the most unique and frustrating films I've seen in a long time. I'll give some quick thoughts so we can kind of all discuss together, because I think this is a film that definitely needs to be discussed as kind of a group to kind of talk it out.
We really need like a group therapy right now.
Yeah. Look. So there's a couple of elements of this film that I kind of want to touch on quickly. The horror elements I really dug. I really enjoyed the mythology of it. This idea that they can kind of turn from mermaids to, I guess, regular-ish women, missing some body parts here. But they can transform back and forth. And the way that they kind of played that out was so flippant that I was just like, whoa, hey, wait. They have legs now. Why, like, are we not going to talk about this? And they kind of talk about it. And the world that they set up here is kind of interesting, because it's like the people are just like, oh, yeah, mermaids, cool. Yeah, whatever. Like, you don't see anybody taking – you don't even see anybody, like, taking a photo or being like, what is this? Like, no, everybody's just like, whatever, cool.
Oh, great, mermaids. Let's make them singers and strippers. And everyone's like, yeah, obviously.
Yeah. The mythology in this film is Coco Bananas. I dug it. I was really into it. And the music waxes and wanes from like really catchy, really fun, really interesting to just downright dull and boring. Some of it was just like, I just wanted the music to stop immediately. And some of it was, hey, this is catchy. This is good. Keep doing this. And then they would immediately switch to a different song and I'd be like, no. So that was kind of my feeling throughout the film. It isn't so much a musical in that a lot of the characters are kind of interplaying with it. What is it? Is didactic, right?
Diegetic.
Yeah. Some of the music is obviously diegetic. There's certainly sequences where characters are like walking and singing at the same time and the camera is following them. But those sequences are really kind of few and far between, beyond the fact that they just happen to be in a cabaret bar, I guess, is kind of how you would describe this place.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And so there's singing going on. So that's where like a majority of the songs end up happening. And it's kind of a cheat. It's kind of like, oh, well, I wish I would have like fully gone after like the musical aspect of it, because that would have been because I think the film mostly does really well when it's in that mode. When it kind of strays away from it, I think it kind of struggles here and there. What else do I want to say? Not too much more. I had a kind of a frustrating experience with this. I would say for, you know, long spurts, I was into it. And then for, you know, bursts of 5 to 10 minutes of storyline, I was just like completely toned out. It was a really weird experience. I imagine, if I'm not mistaken, this is her first film. And it is a woman. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
She's done some TV stuff, but yes, first feature film.
So it kind of feels like a first film in that way. But I got to say, like, the film, the way it pulls off a lot of things, it's really interesting. Like, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what she does from here on out, because this is just, like I said, it's really weird. It's really fun at times. but it's a very big mixed bag for me.
All right, Michael Snydell, what did you think?
I think a good place to actually start. I'm I'm probably more positive than Bill. I actually love the music throughout and the way that it just, you know, like runs the spectrum from like new wave to like almost like trip hop about like self-loathing. Like it's kind of great the way that the music is less like a reflection of even any type of like it's almost a feint at the beginning that it seems like the musical numbers are going to say something about the story, but it's more just about like whatever mood the movie wants to embody, like at that exact moment. But I do think it is useful to like talk about it as a first film because I never found this film dull, but I think it suffers from having way too many ideas. And I get the sense, especially the way the pacing works in second and third act, that they wanted to kind of, you know, work as a homage to a number of different films and a number of different ideas. Like there's times where this, you know, feels like a crime film. There's other times where this feels like, you know, this atmospheric horror film, like something like A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. And then there are literally musical scenes that are, you know, something like out of Demi, like, you know, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. But yeah, it's a ride though, no matter what. And as much as it feels kind of messy and doesn't totally cohere for me, I kind of like just how much it's willing to, you know, dabble in all of these different ideas, whether they're just like visual non sequiturs, like a scene that starts in a car and moves from rear projection to a bedroom. Like there's just so much invention from moment to moment here, and how it isn't afraid to really like delineate when what you're watching is real or whether it's fantasy, and all of that stuff is just great to watch. But at the end, there is definitely a sense of dissatisfaction, as like the rules that they even establish seem to break down, and it becomes unclear what the movie exactly wants to be about. And again, I like that willingness to be very strange, but it does leave me a little bit cold. The last thing I'll say is that as Golden and Silver, Golden is the brunette haired girl, who's played by Mikalina Olszanska. Again, I'm probably butchering this as just as badly as Brian. And Silver is played by Marta Mazurek. And these two leads are just fantastic in the sense of Mikalina just has this like a craven grin every time you see her, and every scene, like she's just waiting to do something horrible. And then you have Golden, who's just like this beacon of purity. And just these two presences are just so mesmerizing to watch. And so even when the movie doesn't totally stay together, it's such an experience to watch, and it always engaged me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of the best way to like just put my thoughts into a simple, normal line of like words.
It's difficult with this one.
So I was never bored during this movie. I was fully engaged and totally into it. I'll be damned if I understand like half of what happens. I mean, We all know me. I'm willing to like pick a movie apart and say, you know, the character motivations don't make any sense. Why does this person do this, and then this other person does this, and then the next scene everything's fine? And this movie is rife with that. And I, you know,
like, and the weird thing is they could have easily gotten away with, oh, it's just dream logic, but they want to ground it.
Yeah.
So it's that weird thing.
And like that's the weirdest part, is that like, yeah, it does have like a dreamlike quality to it, but it's like, but there's too much that's real, that they stop to check in with. And, like, I don't know, man. It's bonkers. It's a crazy, crazy movie. But I enjoyed the hell out of it. It's some kind of something. I mean, what do we even say about it? It's a brightly colored, trippy, visually impressive, but sometimes like weirdly off-putting. Like, these aren't good-looking mermaids. They have like the tail of an eel, and it takes up way too much of their total body mass. It's like,
yeah,
they double
in size, basically.
It's not the visually appealing, you know, little mermaid type of mermaid. It is a horrifying monster. But there's little inventive things that I really like. Like the fact that they can speak via echolocation, and so they have these weird conversations that you hear musically and through subtitle. And then, yeah, the music is fun. This is a hell of a lot more of a musical than La La Land was. It's
There we go.
I had to say it.
Better than La La Land.
I would say this is a better movie than La La Land.
Oh, Jesus.
Hands down. Fins up. I mean, who even knows? But yeah, there's so many things where it's like, I didn't know what the hell to think of this movie, because it opens with, these three people are like down by a beach, and then the girls appear, and then the guys are walking towards it, and then this woman just screams bloody murder, and I'm like, oh, so that's like our jaws opening, right? Like now.
Yeah.
But they're not dead. They are now like the main characters of the film alongside these girls. But it's like, what the hell happened? Like, what did they say to these merwomen to get them to come to this studio 54-esque type place? And then why, when the boss finds out about it, is he like, yeah, all right, we'll just make them strippers and singers. Like, duh. What else are they? Like, what?
They skip over the, like, part in literally every mermaid movie ever where, like, people are like, oh, like, it just skips over, like, the awe and wonder.
Yeah.
Because it just realizes it's so boring. And I love that it does that.
But it skips over that and then straight to, let's impress them into labor in our nightclub.
Sure.
And then over that into some other stuff, and it's like, I don't know, it's like some real off-putting imagery, like the club owner like finding their fish organ. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like, this is a fucked up movie, but I enjoyed it. It's interesting. It's super weird. There is a punk rocker who claims to have once been a mermaid as well, whose name is Triton. I mean,
yes, there certainly is.
You're not gonna, there's just things here that you won't find anywhere else. And so if you can allow yourself to glide over what feel like glaring narrative omissions, then I think you're gonna have a good time with it. But like, I can definitely see how this could be a deeply off-putting movie for people because of just like how little it gives a shit about what you might expect from a movie that is pitched as musical man-eating mermaid film, which is like, how do you have that set up and then somehow subvert even that?
Yeah.
You know, there's a level of creativity here that is shocking and wonderful to behold. But like,
it reminds me of something like Happiness of the, have either of you guys seen Happiness of the Katakuris? The Takashi Miike musical.
Well, that was on Mubi once.
It was. But I mentioned that simply because that is a movie where there's escalating insanity as the movie goes along, but the movie continually treats it as mundane, but then treats like emotional dynamics as the most important heightened thing in the world. That reminded me a lot of this.
Haven't we seen some CN Sono films? I know I have. Have y'all seen some?
I've seen Tokyo Tribe, but that's it.
Okay, Tokyo Tribe.
Or why don't they play in Hell as well? But yeah
okay,
those.
Cool.
Why don't you play in hell for this this year podcast?
Yeah, that one is a little tamer than like some of his other stuff, specifically sure. Like Tokyo Tribe. Tokyo Tribe is real bananas. And this film, it reminds me a lot of that, where it's just going for it and going for it. And you think it's kind of settled into a tone, and then it just ups the ante just a little bit more. And you're just like, wow. Okay, you know, you're just continuously surprised by it just continuing to evolve each time you think you have it kind of pegged down.
And like, why don't you play in hell is a little like that, because there's sure. a lot of craziness in that movie.
Sure, sure.
Like it's a lot.
That's
more...
shot in a very like that's not shot in a super stylized way. Like insane stuff happens, but like, well, I always found his camera movement so. Like oddly static.
Yeah, and I like feel like Why Don't You Play in Hell has this type of story where like everything that's happening makes no sense except in the narrative, but it does it sure. a little better.
Sure. He's had some practice at making yes. those kind of movies for a while.
I mean, I guess we could get into his spoilers, but like there are things here where it's like, no, you literally need to have a whole other scene that explains this to me, because
yep.
you can't just do that. You can't it felt as though it was like the Sci-Fi Channel in like the late 90s, and they had just like cut it for time in commercials. And I was just like, somewhere in some former Soviet bloc country, there is a full cut of this film that makes a lot more sense. But like this,
I like how efficient this is, though. Like I see what you're saying about like it's skipping things, but I think that's so purposeful and like intentioned, and like, you know, compared to this is a it's weird that we're comparing this to Why Don't You Play in Hell? But I guess I kind of see where you guys are coming from. But like that. The thing about this is like I'm constantly feeling like the images and like the gaze of what is happening is being interrogated in a way that I didn't in Why Don't You Play in Hell. Like I think there is a huge amount to be said about how nudity is shot for instance. Like I just feel like from scene to scene, even when it doesn't always make narrative sense, that there's always this kind of continual dialogue that kind of, you know, makes the narrative entirely peripheral. But that dialogue is very coherent if you stay with those two characters and just stay with their journey. And I guess that's a weird thing to ask, because you have to disregard like traditional narrative, but like I feel like the emotional journey of Golden and Silver is pretty much coherent, like on screen.
It's coherent, but it could be this kind of coherent without. We really got to get into spoilers, like.
Yeah, I guess we do.
So, like, I'll just say as my way of wrapping up. Again, totally on board with this film. It's insane, and I loved it. And you won't really see much else like it out in the world. And it's going to have things that are going to like sit in your brain and just burrow in there and just keep on living for as long as you're alive. But yeah, it literally feels like there were just like odd cuts, like every, like, you know, just a scene that should have lasted just 10 seconds longer so that one person could say one line that would help my brain to bridge the gap as to what the hell just happened. But there wasn't. And but that's fine. I guess I just got to take it for what it is. And if that's the cost of being a part of this madness, then I'm with it. You know? Any final thoughts before we get into spoilers and actually talk about like the deeper plot of this film?
Nope, okay. I'm ready.
Everyone, you guys are so against just saying no or telling me that you're fine. You just like sit there in silence and are like, maybe if we just don't say anything. You know, I'm asking the question.
I have a history of stepping on toes, so I've been staying more quiet lately.
You just gotta speak for yourself, man. Like, let's try it again. Does anyone else have anything to say?
No, I already said no.
No, it's good.
It took you like 5 seconds.
It's a good movie. I look forward to what she's going to do next.
I literally just wanted both of you to say no within 2 seconds of me answering. Anyway, let's get into spoilers. We'll keep on working on our communication skills between podcasts. So the basic story here is that Silver falls in love with Miatek?
Yes.
Yes.
Who's played by Jacob Geertzahl. But he literally says to her at some point, like, no, you're always going to be an animal to me. At this point, Golden gets told, like, you know, you better hope that she doesn't fall in love with a human and then he marries someone else or else she'll turn to seafoam, which is what we were talking about, the Hans Christian Andersen nature of this. Golden eats someone in a car by the beach, and then when the family that they're living with, this weird, you know, late 80s Polish partridge family, when they discover this, glad that you got the reference, the father punches both them in the face. They roll them up in carpet and then dump them into a river.
This happens. Yes, it does.
I'm not being glib. This happens. And thus, they then...
This is like an hour into the movie, too.
But, like, what happens before then? It's all just, like, getting to know you, and then...
No, I'm not disagreeing at all. I'm just saying, for point of fact, like... It's just strange because there is still 35 minutes after that.
Yeah. Oh, it's weird that it's because, like, you know, I gave Guardians shit for not having a plot, quote unquote, last week until too late. This movie kind of gets away with just like, oh, it's like a wacky off-kilter kind of adventure. And obviously there's the romance plot going on and we all understand that's happening. But then, like, what appears to be a finale happens and then the girls come back. And this is where this is like... The movie didn't quote-unquote break for me, but there were definite things where I was like, why is this happening? Or why doesn't this affect the story more? There is, like, an out-and-out brawl in the apartment between the family. And then a musical number wherein someone hooks up alcohol bottles to their veins as though they're IVs.
I guess. I thought it was actually poison. And then that woman ends up coming back later in the film.
Drove me, like, crazy.
I don't understand, because I
thought...
What
woman are you referring to?
The one that hooks them all up.
Blonde, and who hooks them up with...
Are you talking about the police officer?
No. The blonde one with the sunglasses in the...
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's one of the main characters. Why are you guys...
No! Michael.
In the wedding scene, she's there with the guy.
Yeah.
That's not...
That's...
Yes, that's the same woman.
Wait, so the woman who is hooking everyone up is not...
Is not the mom.
Is not...
She literally hooks the mom up.
Well, fuck.
And that's the thing. For a while, I was like, oh, it's just... Like, this is just the dream musical logic where she's like, I did this to my family. I'm, you know, I've got us all hooked on...
Yeah, I interpreted it just that, like, that family is unable... to not do things that are toxic for them.
Yes. That makes perfect sense. However, that woman appears later, independent of everyone else, on the arm of the husband after he has left. So that was weird. But so, they have this giant brawl.
It's also maybe implied that he also potentially was with Golden or Silver in a single line of dialogue as well.
I believe that he was not, but that it was just that these girls were around. It's like they were causing
same
trouble just because like, oh, there's an attractive fish person in the house.
Same, but I wanted to mention that, and that is kind of left dangling.
It is. So they have their fight, their brawl, and then they get up and they go and they're like, they're going back to the discotheque to do their thing. And the mermaids are there. They show up because they have murdered in order to get their way back there, and then they bite off the husband's finger.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, as punishments.
And then everything's fine again.
Yeah, then they go play some music.
Well, they're all playing music.
Okay, can I say why I think that happens?
Yes, please, although dear God, do.
All right, it's not clean, and that this, Brian, the moment where they are tossed over the side is the exact moment where I think this movie realizes it has too many ideas and wants to fit all of them in the movie. But I think as far as the finger goes, I think what the movie is trying to do is just reverse the kind of the way that Golden and Silva are treated in that first hour. So there is a sense that, like, as much as they are agreeing to be part of that cabaret, they're also being, again, like, forced into, like, very exploitative labor. And
yeah, it's not even paid for it.
Sure. And it's at that moment that we then get to see them take control of their fate, which then specifically comes into play at the end, especially.
That still doesn't answer the question why the family is not freaked out that Golden – is it Golden or Silver? I can't remember. I'm trying to remember which one is what.
Golden, and she's the one who bites.
Yes.
Off.
It is Golden who bites.
Yes. The family doesn't really react much at all to the fact that he just got his family or finger bitten off. In fact, what he does is he immediately tries to like press it up against something to kind of like stifle the bleeding a little bit. But then they just go on with their lives. And I'm just – none of that makes any sense. But none of this film makes any sense. And that's kind of what I like about it. And that's what's kind of frustrating. Sure. It's all of those things at once, and it's an incredibly unique experience because of that, because it doesn't just throw you overboard and is just like, whatever, here we go. It somewhat makes sense, but it somewhat doesn't all at the same time.
Yeah, and like,
well, I think the weird thing about that finger moment too is that we haven't even seen anything analogous to get a sense of how he would have reacted earlier. So
sure, because nothing scary has happened to anything around them yet.
Sure,
and then all of a sudden, like that happens, and you're expecting like a big reaction, and sure, it obviously hurts him, and he's freaked out about that. But he's not so much freaked out at. Like it's almost like he got a slap across the face and was just like, okay, I can roll with this.
I don't even have a problem with that. Why do they stick around? Why are they like,
cause then they're making money.
They're trying to get to America, Brian.
They're mermaids.
No, they literally, well, yeah, but you know, they want to ride in a car probably.
Do they?
I don't know. I don't know, Brian.
No idea.
I don't know, Brian.
It seems.
No, I don't know. I don't.
Curious. Like they say they want to go to America, but they never really explain why. I'm using my "I hated this movie" voice, but really, I swear to God, I enjoyed this movie. I just have so many questions. Like
no, I Brian, I don't think you're gonna find the evidence there of like. A thrust that they want to get to America. But I think you, again, like the third act of this movie is so completely predicated on the brief motivations we know of Golden and Silver. So, you know, Silver wanting to be with Jacob, like that becomes like a huge engine for a good portion of the third act. And then the end, like it's just like I guess that's a problem, but it's also I mean it's not like it's doing things out of nowhere. Like I think there is some form of logic here, but it continually keeps changing. Like that's I guess what's confusing, but it only really changes like once. Like that's the weird thing. Like it doesn't – it's that exact moment where everything around the plot just kind of changes. And then we get the punk back into the movie in a major – the punk band.
It really is as though like if I were to have hit someone and thrown them off a bridge,
sure.
and then they came back and bit off my thumb. Obviously, I'm not thrilled about it, but I'm like, you know
sure.
what? Fair. Like,
sure.
Know,
yeah.
I deserve yeah. that. And it's, but it's so weird that that's what it is. It's like, that doesn't, but again, I'm on board. I'll just roll with it because the movie rolls with it. And then we kick into like the plot that was set up like in the first 30 minutes that we then kind of took a detour from, which is that Silver decides to remove her tail in order to be with.
In a horrifying sequence.
Yeah, first of all, let's talk about how Soviet doctors were with, like, just cutting the broad in half. Because...
Polish, not Soviet.
No, that's true. Was Poland not part of the Soviet Union?
Oh, shoot. In the 80s? I don't know. Shoot.
Yeah, that's the other question. This film definitely takes place in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure, because I was not quite sure.
Okay, I have an answer.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Wait, Eastern, what?
Eastern Europeans freed from Soviet domination but not part of the USSR are Poland, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Romania. So, like, they were behind the Iron Curtain, but I don't think that they were part of the Soviet Union.
That's all real confusing.
Confusing. Well, it was a confusing time. Anyway, Bill, you were saying...
I can't remember what I was saying.
All right.
What was I saying?
I don't know.
Okay.
you were going to say something. You had a problem with it being said in the 80s.
No, I didn't have a problem with it. I was just making sure that it was set in the 80s because that like, I mean, obviously a lot of the music is kind of 80s set and stuff like that. Sure. But I didn't know if that was just because the 80s are back. You know, I mean, it's been 30 years. So, yep. The 80s are back, baby.
I am fairly certain.
That badass exactly Donna Summer cover.
What'd you say, Brian?
I'm fairly certain that it was set in the 80s.
Okay. Okay.
In fact, the plot on Wikipedia says sometime in the 1980s.
Huh.
So I'm willing to go with Wikipedia because I literally have nothing else to hold on to with this movie.
I guess that's why nobody was like, recording them with like a camera phone.
No cell phones. You know, the cars appeared to be 1980s.
But again, nobody reacts to them anyway. So it's not like, you know, I was expecting like maybe a Polaroid or something like that, like a Kodak. Like, come on. Like, no, people have cameras.
Like, this club doesn't appear to be like a speakeasy. Like, it seems like a pretty popular place. And people are seeing these women transmogrify into mermaids.
It's definitely a popular place because like you see the outside of it and like it's got a huge sign and everything like that. Like, yeah, this place is big.
I think those people just kind of view it as a magic trick though. Like, you'll notice that they never really get close and like try to touch it or anything. Like, they just view it as a great parlor trick.
And the Lure is the name of the band.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Something to think about. Okay, so just to run through what happens. So they go to this doctor, Polish, but not
oh, Soviet. Yes, that's what I was wanting to talk about. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and they give him a bunch of alcohol, and they're like, we want you to do something. And he's like, all right, what is it? And then just like cut to Silver on a bed of ice, like a fish, but also a different similarly proportioned blonde woman also on a separate bed of ice.
Who wants to be a mermaid.
Is that what it
was? I guess.
Yes.
I guess. Like, she does not seem unhappy about the situation.
I thought she was just dead. Yeah. I thought she was just
No.
Dead. I thought it was like...
No. She's moving.
Here's a
she's moving. She's
which
moving.
Which I'm very curious about how prominent mermaid mythology is in Poland. Like, I'm wondering if this is a little bit... a loss in translation in terms of, you know, what people think of folklore.
Is Poland near water?
I don't know.
First of all, yes, it is. I just want to say that, yes. But, like, it's weird because, like, isn't, like, were you just meaning landlocked or what?
Yeah, like landlocked, or is it like an island? Like, I'm trying to think like what Poland even looks like, and I'm coming up all sorts of blanks.
Poland directly abuts Germany. It is separated from Russia by a bunch of the other like bloc countries.
Yeah.
And it's the north has the Baltic Sea.
Okay. So it's got some sea.
Yeah, it's got a fair amount of coastline. I could probably Wikipedia and figure out where. But the thing is, like, do we know what city they're in?
What? Warsaw.
They're in Warsaw. Because Warsaw, yes. Like, I am looking at a map now, is like in the center of the country.
Okay, so it's not close to water.
I mean, I assume there are rivers.
I guess there's rivers that are fed out from the sea. I guess maybe, right? You know, well, that's how rivers
the
work.
The episode charting rivers that move from the Baltic Sea through Poland and maybe
into Warsaw.
Yeah. I'll do that while you talk.
Go ahead, Brian, with your recap. I did want to mention like all of that sequence with her getting her mermaid tail like transplanted over, like I love that it just completely goes with it where like she's got to struggle to like learn how to use her legs, and she's got to like struggle to like and I find it really fascinating that by the end of the film, like, she's still on crutches, and I was like, oh, that's devastating. Like, not only did she get transplanted so she could be with him,
sure,
but then now that he's with someone else, she's also still on crutches. And it's just like, wow, like, I don't know if she's ever not going to be on crutches.
Well, that was I was curious how long.
Yeah, I guess it's been like a couple of months.
I assume.
I guess.
Because I don't want him to be that big of an asshole, but like,
he must be that
big of an asshole. We have no reason to think he wouldn't be.
Sure.
There's a lot of awful people in this movie.
And that's like, you know, because a lot of times in a movie like this, you know, it'll be like, who are the real monsters? And like, that's kind of what this
don't,
is, but.
But they don't really like ever spell that out, which I kind of love. Like, it's just matter of fact how exploitative everybody is.
So. First of all, before we move on, this is important. The Vistula River is the longest and largest river in Poland. It is 1,047 kilometers. It goes through Warsaw.
There we go.
Yep, and then it empties into the Gdańsk Bay of the Baltic Sea with a delta and several branches.
Okay.
It also empties into a lagoon, the Vistula Lagoon. Anyway, so yes, there is obviously a river in Warsaw, and Poland itself sits on the Baltic. What was I going to say? So what happens is she gets changed. They have like one fleeting attempt at a sexual encounter, and he gets weirded out because I guess her stitches bust.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like at a recording studio and meets, admittedly, a very attractive young woman. But then like the next scene is him getting married. And... So then they get married at night, and Triton, the punk rocker, tells Golden, you know, she's got to eat him by sunrise or she's going to turn into sea foam. And there's an admittedly very affecting scene where he is dancing with her, and it seems like they're on good terms, you know?
Yeah.
And so they're dancing, and she's like right about to do it, but then decides not to and looks genuinely happy before dissolving into sea foam. Her sister,
which is terrifying, by the way.
Yeah.
Like even the way they play that out, like, like, and oh my God,
it is a super simple, like, you know, the camera kind of closes in on his back and then it pulls out and he's suddenly like covered in sea foam where he had been holding her. It's
there's some ingenious like camera movement in here. That's like, that's almost nothing that this director just absolutely knows how to frame.
Yeah, that's like
some things.
Good and, damn filmmaking. You know, you don't
You
don't have to like pay to have someone with a computer like, yeah, let's have it turn to sea foam.
Sure.
It's very affecting. It's a very affecting visual. And the fact that you don't see the change makes it a little more horrifying.
Yeah.
So, but she looks fine with this. She's kind of like, I had a chance at love and I felt it, and he's in love now and I'm fine with it. And it's a very kind of Little Mermaid way to end. But Golden is not having any of that shit.
Much throughout the movie, she isn't having any of that shit.
Yeah.
She is a troublemaker throughout.
She is like if every fairy tale princess had like a modern best friend who just did not give a fuck. And so she charges the guy, rips his throat out with her teeth, and then dives into the water. What I have to assume is the Vistula to go to the Baltic Sea.
On her way to America.
Yes.
Jeez.
Which again was their plan. And there's a whole thing about how like she's going to lose her voice if she loses her legs, which she does. And so Golden can't sing anymore because she needs to sing with Silver. If indeed the
Although,
other young woman was turned into a mermaid, we never see her again.
Yeah, she's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's just, what do you guys make of that whole punk rocker subplot? Because that is one of the weakest things in this movie for me.
It's, I hesitate to even call it a subplot, in all honesty. He is an exposition machine.
But it seems like it's meant to be an arc for Golden.
What's so weird about it, though, is like they keep playing it up in like these weird flashbacks or flash forwards. Mm. They keep showing him and you're like, who? Yeah. And you're just like, who is this dude? Like they're having like distant memories of him. And then they see him and they just like, hey, what's up? Who are you? And it's like, what is going on? Are you not having these visions? Are we having these visions? Who's having these visions of this guy? And for someone that becomes so insignificant to the plot and the details, like he tells them a little bit of mythology about like their own beings, which is kind of like, well, sure. Shouldn't they know that?
He mermaid explains to them.
And you're just like, wait, are you important or are you not important? And by the end of the movie, he is insignificant. So I don't understand why they spent so much time on him. I like the idea that he had one of his horns stolen and then so he just shaved the other one down. That seems perfectly logical, I guess. I don't understand. I don't understand what he is, though. Is he a merman? Is he not? Like, he never turns into a merman. And I guess he just, like...
I don't know.
What is...
He doesn't lose his voice.
Does he not have a twin? Does he have a twin?
I literally don't know. But I mean, those thoughts didn't bug me so much. Because, again, he's sort of like... He's just a guy who's like maybe a mermaid or maybe crazy, but he knows about mermaids and they kind of, well, Golden at least turns to him for some advice.
Sure.
And
then.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that like, again, like you, Brian, I wasn't bored, but like as this movie kept going, I was like, all right, maybe this should have ended a bit ago or maybe this needed to be quite a bit more. Like, you know, maybe something like the police woman side thing should have been expanded.
You want to talk about a subplot that doesn't happen or go anywhere. I mean, that's.
But yeah. I liked that where it was like trying to get into like subconscious desires and like potentially the person who is like investigating, you know, it's the person who's investigating the murder is the one she's, having relations with. So it's like there's such so many weird mischances that you could point to in this movie where it's just like again they couldn't decide which of these plots to go with, so they went with all of them.
Yeah, it's a lot of thrown into the wall and see what works,
which is very much like a crutch of a debut,
I think. So but I mean, like I said, it's crazy, and you're not going to really see it anywhere else. And so, you know, for $5 on Amazon or iTunes, I see no reason not to. It's and it's 91 minutes. So that alone should get us the Bill Graham stamp of approval.
Yeah, I guess.
Do we have any other thoughts or opinions on this before we wrap up for today?
Any opinions on the ending ending?
What is the ending ending?
Where it's, well, at least how I read it is that Golden kills herself in the water. Did you guys not read it as suicide?
Well, because she just like jumps into the water, right?
Yeah, but like the way that it's shot, you don't really see her, and you kind of see this empty expanse of water.
Yeah,
and I interpret it as she committed suicide. That might be wrong on my part, though. Maybe she stabbed herself on some coral. I don't know.
I did not take it that way, no.
Well, then what did you take as why she would do that?
Why would she run into the water after murdering a groom?
I mean, she has murdered other people and not given a fuck, so
murdered the other guy, she went into the water. I think she likes to murder and then go into the water to feel like herself.
Yeah, she keeps dragging stuff into the water with her. Usually it's a heart.
I guess
this time it was a piece of his neck.
She Swayzed him in Roadhouse.
I don't know. Like I was curious about that last shot because I was like, I was waiting for her to either appear dead or appear alive, and neither happens. And I was just like, well, that's this movie.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just like she's there. She's, you know, I just took it as, and now she's in the water again.
Yeah.
See, like, I think it loses some of that emotional punch if my interpretation wasn't in there.
But I mean, she's alone, I don't know, in the deep, dark blue sea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And they definitely
She can't sing to make money. Yeah.
How will she get to America? I mean,
she could be a solo act. I thought they told her she could.
Yeah, but I think she kind of like bucked at that idea.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that is The Lure. It is online. You can watch it on Amazon and iTunes now. I recommend it. And
yeah.
If you did see it, tell us what you think. And to anyone from Poland or of Polish descent who listened to this, super sorry about our inability to say names and some basic geographical and geological ignorance. Everyone else, you're welcome that you can now bust out at parties what the longest river in Poland is.
Don't bust out at a party.
Yeah, man, you just walk up to someone, you lean against the wall real cool like, and you tip your hat back and you say, hey, do you know what the longest, largest river in Poland is?
It's the worst pickup line I've ever heard.
Maybe not. Maybe the person cares about Poland.
All right. Sorry, Polish people.
Yeah, that's it. Let me remind everyone that if you love weird, eccentric movies like this, you're definitely going to love MUBI. MUBI is the streaming online cinema where every day you get a brand new film, foreign, independent, or all around wonderful, for you to watch for 30 days and then disappears into the ether. So that's a constantly rotating stream of 30 movies for you to enjoy. They have a beautiful Roku app. And you can also download their movies to your mobile devices. So don't neglect to try out MUBI for 30 days for free, thanks to us. All you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage, and you will get that 30-day trial. All right, gentlemen, it has been something. It has definitely been a thing, and I am glad that that thing happened. Let us tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and the next time. Bill Graham.
You can find me listening to 80s music because of this film on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me writing about movies on The Film Stage and FreshFiction.tv.
All right, Michael Snydell.
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, where I'll be practicing my best echolocation. I will actually have some reviews coming soon. The Chicago Critics Film Festival that I talked about is here. I'm going to be reviewing a doc called The Force and Lucky, which is stars Harry Dean Stanton and David Lynch. So look for that on the site, maybe by the weekend.
Yeah. Your Lord. All right, now I can be found on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan and my personal site, dearfilm.net, and of course, running at Film Stage. That is all for today. Join us next week when we will be reviewing Alien Covenant, and we probably will be having a roundtable between now and then as well. So, good for you that you get to enjoy that. This movie fucked me up. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. Let's get out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Tune in next time.